All right, it's Virginia James with the Zone of Purpose podcast, and I am here with Meg Nyman today. And I'm so freaking excited for this conversation because we've known each other for a few months now. And I know, like, we've talked about this, when you're kindred spirits, you're kindred spirits. So Meg, tell us about yourself. Tell us what you do. Show up and be real about it. Let's go.
Absolutely. So I'm Meg Nyman. I am the founder and facilitator of the Alter Ego Project. And I'm sure that we'll have a chance to talk more about that. But in a nutshell, I help people get unstuck, kind of solve a problem through an alter ego. And alter egos are things that we often think about, like Beyonce and Sasha Fierce and for famous people. But honestly, all of us can have them. Virginia has already shared with me that she has one. Most people, about 30% of people that I meet secretly have one, and everybody can. So that's what I do now. In the past, and we can talk about this, I was an educator for 3 years with Teach for America after getting a cognitive science degree. So I was always sort of interested in how people think and how people learn. And then I switched into tech, and I worked in the tech world for about 17 years in San Francisco, in Seattle, and then also I now live in Pennsylvania, so in Philadelphia. I was a user experience designer. So again, really thinking about how people think and how to make technology approachable to them. I am a people person at heart. And the Alter Ego Project was born out of some of my own experiences when life lives you, when things go a little bit awry. And then using alter egos myself, and then digging into my own research as well as other research to realize that they're actually a really powerful and accessible tool to create change in your life, to give you a little more confidence. I could talk about it for days. It is one of the things that I have discovered in my life that I'm truly passionate about. So I'm honored to be able to share it with other people.
Oh yeah, it's huge. And I think, you know, even in this intro, and of course we talked about the Q&A together, Meg, but we're going to go off script already because we can. But I want to know about this, what you just said earlier about this secretly, like this, that word you use, like some people secretly have this alter ego, because I'm kind of curious about it. Because I mean, I only share mine with select people like you, like my buddies. So tell me more about that if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started the Alter Ego Project as a research experiment. I found that I had some alter egos. I don't think you have to tell people your alter ego. So people didn't necessarily know what I was doing with them. A coach helped me find my first one. And then I actually did go out and socialize with the one that I use a lot in business now. And when I want confidence, her name's Dee. So some people did kind of know that, but some people only knew me as Dee and not as Meg. You know, like, it was all kinds of fun in that context. And I think that alter egos are very personal, and especially the ones that we create or that organically come out of us. It's not the kind of thing that you just start sharing with people. You have to, you know, have some level of vulnerability. And for some people, I think they're kind of like your inner voice. They're a thing that we all kind of know is there, but you don't necessarily name it or share it. And I'm in a place in my life and of the opinion that there's a lot to be gained from sharing. Mm-hmm. And so I just encourage folks, if they're comfortable, to bring it out, because part of what we do with the Alter Ego Project too is really take a problem, name it, and like bring it out into the light. I feel like I'm an anxious and depressed person by nature. I have lots of support in my life, but I feel like there's so many places in our lives that we are the little kid afraid of the snake on the floor, and you just need to turn on the light and realize it is a sock. Mm-hmm. And so like alter egos, I feel like help with that. I'm just like, look, I'm afraid of this thing. And it's like, name it. Confidence. Great. Let's shine a light on it. Let's figure out what that really looks like. Like, what kind of sock? Is it a tube sock? What color is it? Like, whose sock is it? You know, like, let's just go there and talk about it, because, you know, similar to Brené Brown's research, it's just sort of like, you know, shame needs the shadows and it cannot survive the light. And a lot of these things within us are shadows. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we need to kill them off, but the light is really helpful. And The light is like this creative kind of place where we can be a little bit more playful and we can just sort of see. So there's something about me that when I say alter ego, people either light up, they're like, huh, that's kind of curious. Or they're like, oh yeah, I have one.
Yeah.
And it's just fun. And then I also have found that many people have too. So it's not as simple as like the devil and the angel on your shoulder. Like, yeah. I feel like that whole dichotomy, it's fine, but it's usually way more nuanced than that. Yeah. And like, so it's based on, you know, being a prim and proper person versus being a goth person, or it's based, right? Like there are these people who float between, right? Or it's based on, like, for me, there's like a people pleasing, you know, really kind of like innocent little girl who just wants everybody to be happy. And then there's D, who's like, take me or leave me, I don't care. And D, I mean, every time I say D, I sit up taller. Like D is just here. Like you see
just
it.
Present.
Just shows up.
Yeah.
And so like, those are sort of opposites, but also just very different energies that are all within me and within us.
Yeah.
And what I love about working with alter egos and my bag is the creativity of them. So sure, you try to like, you know, synthesize them down into archetypes or into some other like categorization. I have no interest in that. I am much more interested in you telling me about your hyena that you take out when you need to feel like a badass. Or I had another person who had a, it was like Madame Greyhound. And it was this woman with like a fur coat walking a greyhound. And I was just like, yeah. Like,
not earned that one.
No, I mean, these are just like, what's that?
What a descriptor, you know, like, it's visual.
And that's the visual. Exactly.
Yeah, usually like cheetah or, I don't know, a jackrabbit or, you know, I don't know, something like fast paced or like a go getter or something. I have no idea. But that is an interesting visual and something to picture and go, wow, that's fascinating. And that's unique, right?
To exactly. That person. Yeah. Exactly. And that's what I'm most interested in, is, you know, there's ways that you can use alter egos and just tap into somebody else as like a shortcut. And that's totally fair and good. And we could talk about that. And I do some workshops where we do that. But what really like lights me up is when we go deep and we actually like invent a brand new character for you to embody that is what you need in this moment and that is uniquely yours and that you workshop and make into something. And I'm a multitude of contradictions. So I just want to be really clear. Yeah. I am a musician, not an artist. Yeah. If I could draw Madame Greyhound, I would. I don't know how to. I've never acted in my life. I am corporate improv. I've literally never even taken an improv class. Like, I am not an expert in these things. I just find them to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And I'm brave enough to bring them to other people and play with you with them. So I just, like, my whole thing in this is, we're trying to lower the temperature, make this simpler, make this accessible. Like, this is not about a holier than thou or me being a guru or having like amazing skills. This is like, we are at the playground and we are just going to play. And I happen to be the kind of person, which I don't even fully understand why, who like tends to play and will jump up at the karaoke bar because I can, and I know the lyrics, even though I'm a horrible singer. Like, there's some part of me that can jump in. And so I'm the person that jumps in and gives you the confidence, but like, this is yours. This is yours to play with and yours to create.
I appreciate that. It kind of makes me think of, you know, maybe in therapeutic intervention, like a play therapy, like, okay, kiddos, here's your sandbox. Here's all the little avatar toy items, you know, anything that they can be creative with and say, well, what do I feel like even today or in this moment? Because you made me think of like, you know, I cannot wait. I mean, we're going to talk about it too, but like, I cannot wait to take one of your workshops. Cannot wait. Because like, I have my own, just for context for those listening or watching, like, I do have my own alter ego, but the details are fuzzy in some way, shape, or form, which is why I want to work with you, my friend, when I can, and down the road very soon. So like, I think that mine personally is that pearl clutcher Her name's Mindy with an IE at the end. And actually, for those of us 80s, 90s babies, the glitter pen with the heart on the eye, let's just throw that detail out there. That's the best detail I got. But, you know, she's the people pleaser. She's like, oh, you can't do that. Right. And it's been very freaking challenging. Oh, and sorry, Meg, we can swear because it's my show. So I'll just say that. So it's been very fucking challenging. No, I want to say what I really want to say. Because, you know, we hold back. We hold back, whether it's in that job interview, whether it's in that email to somebody, like not a cold pitch, but just a, hey, do you want to work together or collaborate? So there's these very integral parts of us that have been wired, whether it's conditioning, patriarchy, family / caretaker norms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I love that you dig deeper instead of just, it's not really the case, but like I have a book, my book, right, on the bookshelf. It's not just, you know, pick up the book and here, you're one of 12. Ta-da, that's it. Because as beings, we have a lot, like you said earlier, these nuances and these egos shift every 4 seconds sometimes if it's one of those days, right? And I love that this is some of your soul's work and that you've maybe didn't expect it 20 years ago, but you're in it now and you're going, there's some potential here, not just for you as an individual, but for everyone you work with, which is beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you for reflecting that. And I think one of the things that also really lights me up is I'm happy to work with folks on the ones that come up. So Mindy, your pearl clutching, you know, person is probably very, very good friends with my Ernestine, who's a little Alice in Wonderland little girl who just wants everybody to be happy and brings people tea on platters. But I think that a lot of times those ones that organically come out of us they're a little more unconscious. Mm. And because I'm not a psychologist and I'm not a psychotherapist and I'm not an MSW and I have ultimate respect for all of those fields and utilize people's services all the time. I tread very lightly on the unconscious and the things that are coming out of us.
Yep.
And I focus on the conscious creation.
Mm.
And so what I, you know, you're welcome to workshop Mindy, but I think the truth is you want to be a badass who can write that email and not worry about what Mindy has to say. So let's find that person who's going to be the D of your life that gets you to sit up taller and just take up your space and own your experience. And I have a few of those. So I've got D. I've also got Chloe, who's my social media manager, because marketing and social media do not come that easily to me. So I really channel her. She's about 26. Okay. She's super into it. She's unabashed about sharing and promoting. And it's not mine. It's, you know, she's promoting me, which makes it so much easier. So there's a ton of really fun stuff too around, you know, as solopreneurs or as small business owners, we're wearing so many different hats. And how do you sort of create that distance too, that you can kind of wear the different hats that you need to. I'll offer one other interesting story. There's a local knitting shop that I go to and I talked to her. We were knitting during the pandemic because I can talk about knitting in a whole other bag of like ways.
We'll do it like a sequel.
Mindfulness. Yes.
Yes.
But I mentioned to her what I do. And she was like, you know, I have an alter ego because when I'm behind the counter, I am professional and I don't talk politics. And I am about selling knitting. And then if I have a friend that comes in, I will literally walk around the counter and come not be the person in charge, but just a random person who can talk about politics and all the other things.
Wow.
And I just thought like, whoa, exactly. And she knew it. She recognized it. It was this thing that she found herself doing. And it's that I find so interesting. It's like, how do we bring it into consciousness and allow you, you know, she as a business owner doesn't want to be in the business of politics. And so she's made this thing to allow herself to be both and.
Mm.
And so like for you, maybe you don't want to be that bold person all the time because that's not all of who you are. But there are times when it's called for.
Yeah.
So how do you just sort of like consciously bring it in? And then you can, you know, walk back aside. And if Mindy shows up, you know, we welcome her and let her do her thing. Like, it's not about fighting, it's not about erasing, it's not about any of that, but it's just about like, how can we be more conscious about this and actually use it to our advantage and to help us?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think I know we could talk for like hours and hours and hours on these things. And oh, and just quick side plug, y'all listening / watching, follow us on LinkedIn, because there's a lot of talk there about alter ego. And even I remember even commenting on some of your stuff, because and I'm so glad you brought this up, because it's incredibly important to remember it's not that dichotomy, right? It's not just the devil and the angel, or the Jiminy Cricket and the non-Jiminy Cricket, or whatever, right? You know, like, you just even just now you reminded me that you have multiple egoic spaces, head spaces, heart spaces, whatever, you know, where it, whatever the task is, whatever the demand or need is, you kind of pull that personality up a little bit, you know, kind of like a bookmark in a book, you know, just like, okay, what
totally,
are we doing now?
Totally.
Right? You know, let's check this out. And so I really appreciate that it isn't just two things, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's Mindy and whatever the hell we're going to label down the road in your workshop, but like, there's so much more to this. And I know some folk would be like, oh, I don't like that many options. I'm more rigid minded. I can't do that. What are you talking about? And yeah, so it might be a little overwhelming, but that's where there's a facilitator like you who shows up and says, let's keep this simple, you know, or less overwhelming, you know, and help you consciously create this future, this present that you want. And so I really appreciate that.
Yeah. And I just want to speak to that, like, overwhelm and anxiety about too many options, because mm-hmm. I am committed to the notion that you can have as many as you want,
mm-hmm.
but you don't need to have as many as you want. What the reason that I say that is actually much more from a place of permission and mm-hmm. creativity, mm-hmm. because so often we like take the first thing and think it's what we need or what we want. And yeah. And from my background in design thinking and in working in tech, like, it's all about alts. It's all about alternatives, trying different things.
Mm.
In my most recent workshop, I really asked everybody to make two versions mm-hmm. of their alter ego. Mm-hmm. And consistently, the first one was the safe one. And the second one was the one that was a little bit pushed out, but the one that everybody liked more.
Yeah.
And so, like, for even people who are a little bit more anxious, the reason to make multiple is actually to relieve that anxiety, to say, like, this one doesn't have to be perfect. And this one doesn't have to be perfect. And we can mix and match and bring it together to get to something that you really like. And yeah. It's really trying to give you more of that space to sort of play and try.
Mm-hmm.
Because so often I feel like in work and life, there's a sense that, like, you need the thing.
The thing. Yes.
Yeah. And so I'll talk about alter egos all day, but one of the other things that came up in some of the prep that we were talking about is, like, I've worked with a lot of people coming out of college who are trying to get into the design field and trying to getting their first job. Mm-hmm. And there's so much anxiety,
yeah.
especially from, you know, I went to a more prestigious school. So then the alums that come out of there, they feel like they're sort of on this track and they have to keep more and more and more, better, better, better.
Yep. Leveling up all the time. Yep.
And I just, from my own life, I've been so fortunate that things have sort of come to me and I follow the breadcrumbs.
Yes.
And my path stopped at college. Like, I was firmly undecided on my major even. Like, I had no idea what I wanted to do when I grew up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I knew I was going to go to college because that was in my family's kind of storyline. But beyond that, no idea. And I don't have an advanced degree. Multiple people in my family do. I'm the one who most people thought would.
Oh,
and yeah. I just couldn't make up my mind along the way in lots of different mm-hmm. moments where it was like, I don't know what I really want to do. So I've been very kind of like without a map ever since I turned 18.
Yeah.
And really been following, whether it's intuition or society, and kind of weaving my way. But I really firmly believe there's nothing wrong with that. And the folks that feel like they have to go from this school to this job to this, and there might be some things that are cut off. Like, if you have aspirations of being a Supreme Court justice, you might really need to clerk for a Supreme Court justice.
Just saying.
But for the most, for the vast majority of us who still have ambition, you don't know what you don't know. And so it's really like when you're coming out of school, you just need your first job in tech. If you're trying to get into tech, and tech is particularly difficult to get into in some ways. And it's like, but you just need the first.
Right.
And as soon as you've worn on your resume, everything else starts to open up. And so just like focus on that, focus much less on like, if it's the perfect company and if it's this, 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 and cast a wide net. Cause you don't know who's going to be interested in you. Just like a lot of people, when they apply to colleges, it's like cast a wide net, like get rejected. It's when you know you aimed high enough. So I just, if there's a way to kind of, again, like lower that temperature on the anxiety and take away this notion that there is one perfect thing and allow us to see that there's a lot of different ways to get places.
Yeah.
Like I'm not the biggest Sheryl Sandberg fan, but one of the things that she did speak about was that like our careers are more like a jungle gym than they are a ladder.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that feels very true. Like we do all kinds of lateral and even going down to go up. Maybe it's more like rock climbing, but it's just, it's about taking the next logical step rather than the most perfect next step. And something in the Alter Ego Project, I feel like, tries to underscore that. And very much what I talk about on LinkedIn and other places is just about like, how can we give ourselves a little bit more grace and acceptance of also what it is, and not like fight against it. You know, if you got a good job from a medium-sized tech company and it's not Google, like take it, you know who you're gonna meet. And truthfully, you're more likely, if you take a job at a medium-sized tech company, which is what I was fortunate enough to do when I was younger, those people all turned out to be people at all the big companies now.
Right.
Like if you're in tech, you want the next big thing, the next Google. So take the small job and see where all those people go. That's going to actually most likely serve you better than being one of many in a massive corporation that, truthfully, Google is the Microsoft of today. So
I'm agreeing with you. I don't know, because I've not worked in tech, but I'm taking your word for truth in what I see. And I think, like, you know, you're speaking this, well, like the Sheryl Sandberg advice or suggestion of this jungle gym, that's the same thing as like the zone of purpose. That's what I call it in my work. And so, you know how fucking freeing it is to see that things aren't linear? Like it takes decades. Okay. But you know, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. But I think that, you know, it's really important. And this is actually my next question. It's a good segue, because when you're talking about kind of sort of in a way going with the flow, seeing what's logical and what fits versus pushing for something. So when you've been through, you know, on your career journey, we'll call it career journey in quotes, you know, were there any breaking points? And I say that phrase very softly, understanding we all have breaking points, whatever you want to call them. So what was the breaking point that taught you that advice that you just shared with us, like kind of ride with the wave instead of trying to tell the wave it's not a wave and that it's you know, being bananas? Like, so do you mind explaining that for us?
No, I mean, the breaking points for me were all the moments when I ended up with really massive transitions. When I was younger, said that I'm really good at doing things I hate.
Yeah.
Which is like the saddest thing to say, but it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'll give you three, and all of them were really pivotal to where I am now. And were very much the sort of Steve Jobs from his Stanford speech of like, you can't connect the dots going forward. You can only connect them backward.
Yeah.
So I'll try to be somewhat brief. But the, you know, I went into teaching because I had this cognitive science degree that I didn't know what to do with. I took every class that I was interested in and got a degree out of it. And then the most logical thing was to do research, but I didn't want to do that. And I did not know about UI and UX and any of the tech applications. This was 2001. I went to a liberal arts school. It just was not part of the curriculum, and it wasn't clear. So I did Teach for America because I had an instant community and I always liked kids. I was a good tutor. That was the main job I had in high school. And 3 years in, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it anymore. Teaching, I will say, and I know other people who've left the field, it is the hardest job I've ever had. I've shipped technology for millions of people. I've worked on multi-million dollar accounts. None of that compares to how difficult it was to be a teacher.
Yeah.
And I quit it without a net. I didn't know what I was going to do. But I really did hit this breaking point of realizing that it was not fair to me or the children in my classroom to continue being a teacher. It wasn't fair to have them have a teacher that didn't want to be there. That's not my ethos and what I wanted to do. And I was really in debt for various reasons. I was literally $100,000 in debt. This is $2001 or $2004. And I was making $40,000 as a teacher. Like the math did not line up. And so I was really sort of desperate for something. I was looking at teleprompter jobs. We didn't have AI then. And those were high paying jobs. I was like, how fast can I type? Maybe I can do this. And then the fates kind of aligned. And I ended up doing a lot of informational interviews with people from my college, with people from Teach for America. And I guess this is not like an ego thing. I went to Wellesley College. So I had a ton of like women in my network, which was amazing and really incredible to be able to do informational interviews with them. And it's, you know, small liberal arts colleges like that, and especially women's colleges, tend to take care of each other. So it was actually, I had a lot of support of people trying to help me figure out where to go, but it was actually a Teach for America connection where I thought it was an informational interview. And she was like, oh, you're not applying for the job? I need to hire somebody and I don't like anybody who came through and I think you'd be perfect. And I was like, okay. And that was my first tech job. And so like, that was how I got in, was honestly, I didn't even realize I was applying. I had been applying to Houghton Mifflin and to all these other people, cold resumes, but it was the warm connection through my network that got me in.
Yeah.
And then my tech career kind of unfolded, but that was a big breaking point, right? To leave teaching with no plan and a lot of debt.
Yep.
And I just had to take the leap of faith because it was not working.
Yeah. And you knew it. You knew it in your body. You knew
I
it,
knew it in my body.
All capacities. Yep. You're like,
I mean, truthfully, my third year was already pushing things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so by the end of the third year, I was like, this cannot go on.
Yep.
And so then I had kind of this illustrious tech career, whatever. I mean, it was fine. I did well. And then I hit another breaking point where I guess, I'll skip over that one.
That's okay.
I took an RV trip. We'll talk about that at a different podcast. But I think I'll just speak about two breaking points. The second breaking point was, no, there are three. I'm sorry. The second breaking point was when my 12-year relationship ended. And I was doing some consulting in San Francisco and already kind of overcommitted. And then I got this opportunity to work for one of the consulting companies and be like the fourth person in, which I'd never worked at a small company like that. I was kind of curious. And so kind of as my relationship fell apart, I was taking on this new role and trying to figure that out. And 6 months in, they laid me off. And so then I was like literally sitting in a $3,000 a month apartment that didn't have a full kitchen because it was San Francisco. It was a live work loft, like ridiculousness. No relationship, no job, tons of community, but I had been wanting to move closer to my massive family in Pennsylvania for 10 years. And I had been interviewing with another company because I already knew that the company I was with wasn't really working. I had a coach at the time and she said, do you want to work? And I immediately said, no.
You just knew.
It was like, so for me, what happens is I'm like the Anais Nin quote of, which I'm going to butcher, but basically like when the pain of being a bud is worse than the pain of expanding, like it's a butchered quote, but that is the idea. That is me. So it was like the pain of being in San Francisco was worse than the unknown of moving across the country. And she challenged me. She was like, in a week before we meet again, you need to buy a plane ticket to Pennsylvania. And I was like, that sounds insane. And 24 hours later, I had a plane ticket one way to Pennsylvania. And I haven't looked back. So that was another like pivotal moment. And so for me, I actually don't see myself as a particularly risk-taking person. I don't see myself as being overly, I actually think that I'm pretty cautious, but I do have these key moments where like things just hit this point where I can't sustain it anymore. And some part of me has faith in my ability to figure it out. And I've had enough moments in my life where I have figured it out that I sort of take these calculated risks. And this is maybe a whole other thing, but I really, when I take a risk, I start off doing a small version.
Oh, yeah, that's smart.
If I have what I call a reason to believe.
So
like even with the startup, I had been consulting with them. I had a reason to believe it was going to work.
Yep.
With this shift to Pennsylvania, I'd already visited my sister's house. She kept saying, I have room for you. It had been a dream for 10 years. Like I had plenty of reason to believe this was the right thing.
And a lot of data points in conversation, like it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You have a place, you know.
100%. So these aren't, and even when we did the RV trip, which I won't go super deep into, but we did a 29-day trial.
Yeah.
With a rented RV to see if we liked it. And we said, yeah. We're in, and then we bought our own RV and we did it for a year. Mm-hmm. But there's, I think so often on the outside, you're like, oh my God, you sold, you know, you got rid of all your stuff and you just moved across the country. And it's like, I've been working with a coach for 3 years to plan the sabbatical that I wanted to take. Like this was not out of nowhere.
Right.
There was plenty of groundwork that I had laid. And then I finally kind of took the leap.
Yeah. And, I'm going to show up at the airport at 4 in the goddamn morning and I'm going like or whatever 2 a.m.
exactly. And my whole family was like, great, we've been waiting for this moment, you know. And so like the last one that I'll speak of was the Alter Ego Project. And that one, I had been working as a consultant for a few different companies in Philly, had built up a whole new network. Some parts of it were really amazing. I actually really enjoyed all of my clients, but I had this, I was burnt out. I took a 1 month break and I came back and I lasted 6 weeks.
Okay.
And there was just this like moment. It was actually a Martha Beck exercise where, and she's all about sort of getting into your emotions. And so you say two things out loud. And I was like, I'm going to continue doing my consulting job and I will learn a lot from it. I'm going to do the Alter Ego Project. And like, literally that's what happened both times. It was like my whole face lit up and I took a video of it and I was like, okay. I mean, I wasn't even like putting on a show. That literally just happened because it's that important to me. And my reason to believe on that one, and I did take a pretty big leap and I'm figuring it out because I had some savings, but I jumped full force into the Alter Ego Project and we got to go to South by Southwest and had one of the biggest, like one of the most popular workshops there, which was a huge, you know, kind of notch in my, not your belt, I think is actually like a violent metaphor, but it was a huge win for me and an amazing place. That was a lifelong dream of mine to be able to be a presenter at South by Southwest. I've always wanted to be on stage. So that was like huge and felt like incredibly validating. Candidly, you know, continuing to build the business, it's hard. This is hard work, so much harder than I expected. But my reason to believe with the Alter Ego Project was actually almost the inverse, which is that I had been trying to build it while working full time for 2 years.
Yep.
Not getting traction. And so that moment where I was like, well, I'm unhappy with the work that I'm doing. It's good money. I can't blame my clients. I can't blame anything other than it's just not what I think I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah. And coupled with the fact that I wasn't getting traction on the Alter Ego Project without giving it my full attention was my most recent version of, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. And I said to everybody in my family and friends, I was like, listen, I'm jumping out of a plane.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds scary. I've researched the outfitter. I'm doing it tandem. They have an incredible safety record. I've done flying trapeze. Like, I've done lots of things that have shown you that this is going to be reasonable and that I'm taking care of myself. I've also made peace with death. If I die, I'm actually even okay on that.
Yes.
So like, I know this is scary for all of you, but I know what I'm doing. I'm jumping out of a plane. I have not literally jumped out of a plane, but I have done flying trapeze and all the other things. And so, you know, it's like, that also is part of it, is like sometimes taking that calculated risk, and it remains to be seen whether this is or is not a horrible decision on my part, but it was what felt necessary, and it was not without a lot of thought and trying alternatives and then landing on this. So I think when those breaking points come, I've learned to listen to them. And then the last thing that I'll offer is, I have a friend, and we've talked about this both in careers and relationships. And he was like, you know, I've never left a relationship or a job too soon. Like, right? How often do we stick it out and really grind away? And there is nothing wrong with giving it your all and going as far as you could. And my 12-year relationship, we are on good terms, but I think we would both say that we probably gave 85, 90%. I'm sure there's a little more we could have given, but we tried. We tried.
We tried
different ways. We still love each other. Like, it wasn't for lack of trying. But both of us would also say we could have ended it 6 years earlier. We practiced breaking up many a time. And
break so it up, I think, make it up, you know,
yeah,
like
exactly. We talked about, I feel like we had so many iterations of like, when's the last time you're going to see my family? Who's going to take the dog? What's going to happen? Like, so many tears that by the time it finally happened, it was like, yeah, okay.
You felt that close. You're just like,
yeah,
an easier close. I'm saying
that it was though. It was. I mean, I feel like we practiced.
Yeah.
And so, and again, I'm not actually advocating that you're in a relationship that you have that on and off cycle. Like, that's not necessarily healthy or good.
Yeah.
I think it is this sort of thing where my goal in life is to get better at recognizing when I'm at that breaking point and taking action sooner.
Yes, 100%.
And maybe even leaving too soon. Maybe even leaving something before I know that it's not going to work, because I just have a feeling, and like then giving myself the grace that like if it could have worked, like just to let that go and just you know, like, it's all about finding, there's sort of like this line, there's a whole other thing I could get into, but in my frame, there's a line, and there's lots of ways to find the line, but often you have to go over the line to find it.
And then you see it back there. And
you're like, gotta get back here. Oops, that was a little painful.
Yeah.
And so like, in some ways, like, leaving too soon is actually like going over the line. And you're like, okay, I guess I could have stayed. But what we often do is we just inch, and you're just like, am I at the line? Am I at the line? You know, and it's like, you never know if you're there, because you never actually get to it. It's that like infinite having.
Yes.
And so the more that we can just be like, it's okay to totally fuck up. It's okay to screw everything up and go over the line. Like, people will still love you. It is human. It is human. My therapist says this all the time. You are being human. It's human to go over the line. It is human to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. It is human to not know until you know. And all of that is like good. That means that you're growing. That means that you're learning. Like, you're not doing it wrong. You're actually doing it all the ways that we're meant to do it.
Yeah. And I almost cut you off and said, you're doing it right. Well, that might be our perspective, my friend. But, you know, right. I mean, because like,
but you're doing it. Like, can we just say like, that's it? You're doing it.
End of podcast episode. Boom. Do it. You know, look at the line, be the line. And that's huge, because like, you know, my next question, which maybe you already answered, but like about these comfort zones, right? And in my program, I talk about different, you know, comfort zones, whatever, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. But the point is that we have
doesn't matter.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I was like, but this is about Meg. You know, if y'all want to know, go to my website. But the point is that we have a lot of lines or these circles or these hoops that we try to go through and all these things, and we tow it and then we back off and then we tow it and we back off. And the reality is there's a whole bunch of freaking lines throughout our entire life, right? We were talking earlier about those ladders or this jungle gym or whatever. You can go in multiple, it's going to sound a little woo-woo, but you can go in multiple directions and dimensions and things to expand yourself in different ways. And so I appreciate how you, thank you also for sharing these vulnerable stories with me and us. I really appreciate that too, because sometimes we expand forward, sometimes we expand backwards, sideways, diagonally, like the jungle gym idea, maybe climbing up somewhere, jumping down, you know. I mean, we all, you know, as beings have these different experiences, and let's respect those experiences, right? You know, we won't get into why, but like earlier before we hit record on our show here, like we were discussing about these different ways of thinking that are very rigid minded. And so the beauty about alternative, right, or alter spaces of thinking and being is we can say, well, wait, I want to try this differently. And those who love you in platonic or romantic ways will say, I support you in that. I don't know what the fuck you're doing, and I'm eager to see what happens. I got the popcorn, but I am here for you. And so I appreciate that you've decided, because when we first met, did you decide to go into alter ego like full on yet? Or were you still doing something? No, it might have been a cusp.
It might have been. I think I was probably pretty in it at the time that you and I met, but yeah. I'm neither here nor there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I love it. And I think like, and you do light up when you talk about this stuff, right? You do. And so that's something for anyone listening or watching is what lights you up. Even if you say, oh, it's 87 things. Great. Then you have 87 things that light you up. Cool. Yeah. Like there is no way you have to do the one thing, the thing like we were talking about. That doesn't even exist. Honestly, yeah. Construct for fuck's sake. Excuse me.
But, like, 100%. And I think that like, so I don't know everything about Serena Williams. I know she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad was given, I actually didn't see the King Richard movie, but, or whatever it was called, but her dad was given a lot of flack for doing weird stuff. He had them do ballet. He had them do dance. He had them do football drills. Yeah. He had them do all these things that were unexpected, unusual in the tennis world.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, who knows which of those did or did not contribute to their amazingness, but some of them probably did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that there is so much to be said for sort of like, I use lots of different metaphors. One is to like follow the breadcrumbs. The other one is to like sort of follow your nose. Like I feel like I did not grow up as a woo person. I did not grow up with the sense that there was any intuition. I grew up in a family that was very about your brain and about logic.
Yeah.
And I've really been working in my adult life to figure out what's in my heart and get more connected.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I've talked about a little bit, and I will bring in here, is I don't think I would be doing the Alter Ego Project if I hadn't taken up knitting.
What a transition.
Yeah.
All my knitters out there, like, yeah. Hey, you're sitting on this.
Because I had been knitting. I tried knitting in high school a little bit. My mom taught me. And then I tried knitting a little bit after that first job in tech. She was a big knitter and she taught me. And I remember when I was learning to knit, she would be like, okay, is this a knit or a pearl? Those are basically, knitting is basically binary. There's like two things. There's a knit or a pearl. And I'd be like, it's a pearl. She's like, nope, it's a knit. And we did this over and over again. Like I could not freaking see it. It drove me.
I still, to this day, I'm like, let me Google it and get it.
Yeah. And now that I've been knitting for as long as I have, I'm like, it is so obvious. I'm like, it's in my bones. Like, pearl, it's a knit. But weirdly, in knitting, I have been fearless. And I've been fearless because I do not care. I do not care if what I make looks good. I don't wear a damn thing I make. I make stuff for babies. I make hats for other people. I will rip out days worth of knitting at the drop of a, like, I am so unattached. It is like a mandala to me. I am unattached to any of this. And I take on patterns that I shouldn't do. I've knit stuff that's all gooped up and weird. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll try that again. Yeah. It is a meditative practice for me. And I get so much relief, and like, it lowers my temper, my anxiety and my blood pressure to knit. It is just, it is this like thing that probably like runners get this too, you know, of just like, it's just, it's a way to relieve stress. For me, I'm not a runner. I knit and I knit and I try stuff and I am unattached. And by doing that, I've taken way more risks and I've made way more complicated things than I feel like I have any right to do. Mm-hmm. I still consider myself like a beginner intermediate. I think I've done some pretty complex stuff. I'm like, it's figure outable. That whole notion of like, is it figure outable? Yes. And thank goodness we have YouTube, because what a difference it is learning to knit with videos and close-ups compared to like, oh, the book is hard. It is,
I've
it's
got
like
five learning, of them, but I'm like,
yeah, learning to tie knots in books too. Like, just, it's just hard because these are physical things and you want to see it. And if the best thing would be to have a master knitter next to you, and the next best thing is to have YouTube. But like, truly, 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 this avocation, this hobby, and this notion that I am not invested. I do not claim to be a knitter. I'm not going to be a master knitter. I also, for the record, have made very bad art because I am not an artist. And I've done weird stuff that doesn't make any sense to anybody but me. And I love it.
It's psychedelic, you know, just like, whoa.
Anyway, it's bad. It's bad art. It's like deliberately bad. And there's something good about that. There's something good about just being like deliberately uninvested and not caring. And it's given me the courage to do things that I am invested in and that I do care about. And so I think like for the people that are interested in 87 different things, it's like, yeah, go do one of those 87 things and do it because your heart wants to do it, and do it because you are bad and at it. Do it because there's like, you have no right. Like, this is a phrase I use, which is probably damaging in its own way, but I'm like, I have no right to do that, but I do it. And there's like something, the damaging part is like, I shouldn't say that I have no right, because everybody has right to do whatever the hell they want. But the fact that I have no right and I do it is the magic. And yeah, I just encourage anybody who's listening, like, what is that thing? Like, make bad food. Like, I'm not trying to be wasteful, but there's an element of just like, let yourself off the hook. Mm-hmm. One other thing I will offer is Kristen Neff has a book called Self-Compassion.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I have not finished it because I'm very bad at reading.
No.
An exercise in there that it was worth the book itself. And it's just like, listen, we are all good at some things, average at some things, and bad at some things, right? The joke is like 80% of people believe they're a better than average driver.
Right. Yeah.
No, nobody wants to admit they're a bad driver. It's not cool.
Not cool.
I would say that right now, it's not cool to say that you don't know how to cook. Like, cooking has become this thing. Like, you have to know how to cook.
Gourmet. And
I am an average to below average cook. I can follow a recipe. I'm a decent baker. I am not a good cook. And to finally just like write that, it's like, what am I bad at? I'm not a good cook. Yeah. I'm awful at languages.
Yeah.
I'm like, I like to dance. I'm not a good dancer. I am so unathletic. I cannot catch a ball basically to save my life. Like, anytime I catch a ball, it's like, and I'm in a family with like Division I athletes. Like, I am the outlier. And even music, I love playing music. I'm not an amazing musician. Mm-hmm. I like playing music. Yeah. There are other things that I'm really great at. I'm really good at bullshitting. I'm really good at talking. I could talk forever. And just really being honest with ourselves and saying like, listen, you are human. Of course, there are things that you are really good at. There are things that you're okay at. And there are things that you are bad at. And that makes you human.
Oh, yeah. And it's okay. It's okay to suck at some things.
It's okay to suck at something.
Yeah. And even if you try 400 times and you still suck at it a little bit, there's no shame in that.
No. And it's okay to love something you suck at.
Yes.
Yes.
It, like there is no shame or shade in loving dancing and being horrible at it.
Right. Or like you love to sing. I saw this on LinkedIn recently. Somebody loves to sing. And somebody's like, well, where do you sing? In my car, because I'm not good at it. And I don't want to put others through that, you know, or you're on the freeway and you see those people jamming. We're all stuck anyway. Why not? You know, and you're trying to figure out what song they're, you know, maybe, you know, lip syncing to or something. But, you know, I think like this is huge. And on a quick side note, because you might have already answered my next question, but on a quick side note, the last thing I knitted, okay, so long story short, I'm cold very easily. It's just my body makeup. All right. So I've been trying for about 2 years now to make this core like body warmer thing, aka a sleeve that's not a corset. I don't know how to explain it, but the stitch in it, I was like, thank fucking goddess for YouTube, because I was like, in the instruction, and you know those instructions, you're like, I have no idea what you said there. I don't know what you said there. And I really don't know what you just said there. So I had to Google. There's one video for the metamorphosis stitch. Badass name. Have a metamorphosis stitch.
Not encountered this one.
I know. I'm going to send it to you if I find the pattern somewhere in my office. But what you do is you're in the round, whatever, whatever. Okay. Of course, I'm a dork, and that was the first project I've ever done in the round instead of flat. And I'm like, oh, this is great with a whole new stitch. Oh, yay. But anyway, so you go around and you know, you do your, I don't know, knit purl, can't remember the pattern right now. You go along and then you do 5 rows and then you drop 4 of the stitches. You bring your needle back around. Ooh. And it creates a butterfly pattern.
Wow.
So it took like the, you know, to your point, I had to undo that sucker like 2 or 3 times. And now I'm sitting here like a year later, and of course fall's coming again. So I'm like, oh sure, I want to knit again. Why not? And I'm looking at this thing. It's in my office. I'm just like, I have no fucking clue where I left off. I mean, you got stitch markers, but you're like, I don't know if that's off by 1 or 2. So I might be ripping it out. And it's so scary for those who are knitters who are listening, or crocheters or artists or whatever, to undo some of your work so you can continue to do it. But how symbolic is that for life, right? You know, and I think like, this is my next question. So like, that's something I would tell my younger self, is let the stitches go, girl. It's okay, because you're gonna create something so much better. You don't know it. You don't know it, and you're freaking the fuck out right now, but it's gonna be okay. What would you tell your younger self? You know, like any of the lessons so far, you know, that are prime, that are key for you.
Like the power of grace.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There was, as a younger person, I put so much pressure on myself. And, you know, I was thinking about this morning. Mm-hmm. That quote of the definition of insanity is doing the same thing twice. Is that
again,
how it goes?
Again, yeah. It's, yeah. And thinking that the outcome would be different, basically. Yeah.
And thinking the outcome would be different. Right. Yeah. Okay, fine. With the outcome being different, I guess it's a little bit less upsetting. Mm-hmm. I don't like that quote.
It's hard. Yeah. There's some problems in it. You know?
There's some real problems in it. There's some real like perfectionist sort of pushing in that quote. I feel like even a scientist, if they get a wildly unexpected result, will do the same experiment exactly the same,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
they're not convinced that they didn't get it.
Yeah.
That there wasn't something that they were missing.
Right.
Sometimes we have to learn the same lesson multiple times. And when we come around it on the second time, we're actually bringing new information to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think like all of that shame and doing it wrong and I should have known better, shoulda, woulda, coulda, like all of that was so deep in me when I was younger. And just the sense that I couldn't like falter, that like that making a misstep was an indictment on me
and your character, or how you show up, or
100%.
Like the future for 80 years till we're dead or something. Like,
yeah. I mean, I've taken way more risks as a 30-something and 40-something than I did in my 20s. I was actually very afraid as a 20-something. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, and even in college, I kind of regret that. Yeah. I think that there was a lot that I could have, I could have made more mistakes and probably learned some of the lessons that I'm embarrassed that I'm having to learn now at 43, because I was so committed to doing it right and not having egg on my face and not having to backtrack and apologize and just sort of keep going forward. And so, yeah, grace was never a word that felt accessible or even something I would want when I was younger. And the first time that I really saw it and felt it was, I had a cousin who is about the same age as I am, and she had a battle with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And she handled that with such grace.
Oh,
it was the only word that made sense.
Mm.
And to really recognize that, like, grace isn't necessarily, she was so strong and such a fighter during that time, and yet also graceful. So it's not that grace is softness. It's not that grace is just like pushing things aside. Like, grace was her taking all of those inputs and finding a level path to go on that mm-hmm. allowed for all of it, but also didn't like overly indulge. Like,
mm-hmm.
I have so much respect for my cousin who made it through this journey, and she is on the other side, and she has a lovely daughter and everything as well. But that power in grace
mm-hmm.
and just allowing it to happen, allowing the mistakes to be made. I wish that somebody had offered that to me and that I had been able to have the grace to accept it when I was younger.
Yeah, because it's not a weakness. Like, I think we're similar in age, so I don't want to totally construct our reality, but like, I think there's a lot of in our quote generation, right? You know, where we have to show up. In some ways, we be silent. We just take it and we just move forward and we don't fucking complain and or whatever, right? You know, and within that, interwoven with those experiences, whether it's professionally or personally, you know, it's this like buck up soldier, you know, that bootstraps, wiring, right? And so I was in the same situation growing up for varying reasons, and that's its own show, etc. But like, I think that grace, it's an incredible 5-letter word, right? Mm-hmm. Even when you say it out loud, you just feel a little bit more whole and complete. And I think there's a lot of young folk and older folk, right? And everywhere in between, we need to give ourselves grace more often. We really need to, because that's how we heal. That's how we move forward. That's how we look at the line and go, whoop, fucking crossed that 20 years ago. Let me go back and fix that for just a day. And heal from it and say, well, that was interesting, plot twist, and now we move forward, right? Because you're right, and like, we're always gathering information. Today's a new day. This very moment's a new moment versus an hour ago when we were, you know, chit-chatting about things or whatever it is, you know? And so I think like that matters. And I love that that's not the word, but I love that that's your answer, because it's incredibly powerful. And I'm excited to see what more, you know, especially with Alter Ego and just your life in general, you know, what are those opportunities to show yourself grace, right? And go, oh, honey, it's okay. It is fine, fine, fine. Oh, that like we were talking about with marketing, because we're in the same sitch, right? Like, I don't like marketing myself. I just want conversations, damn it. You know, so when you're like, well, that sales call, if you can call it that, was a bust. You know, or I made a script like a year ago and I was like, I don't fucking follow the script ever. Like, and that's okay too. And what a lesson for us to continue in our 30s and 40s and 50s, etc. And just a little PS on this note, before we move on to the L word, my mentor, she said in one of our meetings a few months ago, or I don't know, a while ago, She was like, Virginia, I cannot wait for you to not give a fuck what anyone thinks. And I was like, you know, such and such, I agree with that. You know, because and she found out maybe more of that in her 50s, right? But like, God, for those of us who are kind of quote type A, or we have a lot of self-pressure, we give 180% all the time to everybody else. It's very powerful for us to say, it's okay if you take some time. It's okay to chill out. It's okay to do what your heart calls you to do. You don't have to fit in the box anymore. Because what is the box? Which is a whole big conversation and philosophical, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's another, I'm playing with my hair.
It's okay. Do
it. There's Iris, people who have read my stuff know this. Iris Dement has this song called The Way I Should. Mm-hmm. And it's really like this whole deal with the devil, actually. I was realizing mm-hmm. when I looked at the lyrics more closely, but
yeah,
she has a line that says, I realized I was keeping my score up in a game I didn't choose.
Oh, goosebumps on that one.
Like, how many of us are doing that? And so I think as part of the grace equation is like, what do you want in your life?
Yeah.
What, and we're going to have another conversation about this, but like, for me, I think of it as like, what is a contented life?
Mm-hmm.
And that is not definable by anybody but you.
Yeah.
And I've spent time in meditation and in yoga and in unraveling and in trying weird things like driving around the country for a year in an RV and not working for a year and really kind of like figuring out different ways that identity could work for me mm-hmm. to try to unravel that. And so if we wanted to, we could talk about what that means for me, but I just think that like, as part of the process of giving yourself grace is to ask that really bold question of mm-hmm. like, what game are you playing? And is it the game you choose?
Right. Right. Who's on your team? Is this the sport quote that you want to even be engaged in? Right.
Yeah. You know? What are points? Like, what is it money? Points? Is it time? Is it relationships? Is it love? Like,
yep.
What are you even using as a scorecard? Because, and so often we're just fed things. We're fed things like money is the scorekeeper, or, you know, I happen to be divorced. Neither mm-hmm. my ex nor I wanted to be divorced. Mm-hmm. I do believe in long lasting relationships, but there are people who like, that is the score, is like, I'm going to stay in this relationship come hell or high water, despite mm-hmm. the fact that we are both incredibly miserable and not living our best lives. And
right.
that is a choice for each person to make as like, is that the game you want to play?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not even that like, I'm here to judge your game, but just know that we're always playing some sort of game.
Yeah.
So many of us are playing a game we did not choose
mm-hmm.
and keeping score with things that don't actually matter to us. And mm-hmm. it is a revolutionary and bold statement to ask that question of like, what do I want to use to keep score, and what game do I want to play?
Oh yeah. Well, and this is beautiful segue into the next thing, legacy.
Oh, man.
I could have realized, I was like, the L word thing. That could be a lot of different L words.
No, I was like, what was that? What was
yeah.
I so love that you ask legacy.
Yeah. Tell me.
I love that you ask this because I, as somebody who has not had much of a plan since I was 18, struggle hard with legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be remembered for the way I made people feel. I want to be, I already feel like, this is the story of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have been loved and I have loved.
Mm-hmm.
I have taken adventures. I have had amazing experiences. I have been, now I've experienced death. I've been at a birth. Mm-hmm. I've reveled in nature. I am living in a place that I love. I've had moments in my life where I truly am spending my time exactly how I want.
Yeah.
I've experienced beauty where I literally said out loud, I could die right now and it would be fine. And so that's kind of all that I'm going for. Which doesn't make a great business plan, I gotta say. Like,
it's your business, babe. You do whatever you want. Like, that's okay.
But I feel so fortunate that I've had all of that in my life and that I can see it and that I can recognize it. And so if my legacy is that I lived my life as much as I could on my terms and I learned and I came to peace with how my life has unfolded, like that really is enough. And I would be, grateful if I left something in this world that helped other people. But if just my presence in the here and now helps people, that is also more than enough. And truthfully, if my presence in the here and now just helps me, I'll take it.
Your heart is low right now. It's okay.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to be overly selfish, but I just feel like that, my job is to take care of me first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My job is to take care of me enough that I can help others.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I have a kind heart. I know that I really believe in the possibility of everybody. And yeah, that's what I'm here to do.
Amazing. Yeah. And I think like you've helped us recognize that, that self-awareness is big, right? And what you just said is like, essentially, if I have kind of XYZ things, I'm content. I'm happy. Like if something happened to me tomorrow, I'm feeling pretty damn good about things, right? And that doesn't necessarily minimize or discount the really fucking hard times in life, right? You know, that we've all been through. But at the same time, like what a journey to be able to identify those things that are the kind of the equivalent of the bucket list, right? Mm-hmm. And like, what are those, whether we call it values or boundaries or guardrails or something, right? That classifies these things, that categorizes these things. But I appreciate how you have found that light within yourself and you're helping others find that light as well. Instead of just like, just accept it for what it is, tough shit. We grew up in that era and that's
totally fine.
But like, guess what? There's different ways to do life. And if this is your legacy, guess what, my friend? You're actually already living in it. You're already serving people. I can tell on LinkedIn and I can see it in your workshops and you're serving yourself with recognition. And that is amazing. Especially you're a role model for me in that, like, I got to take care of myself first, or when I have a tech hiccup, which happens every time we talk,
yes. bad tech mojo to you.
I apologize. It's okay. But like, that grace, it comes back, that grace and how we want to define the rest of our lives, because no, we cannot go backwards. Yes, we can think and reflect on that line that we crossed like 20 years ago and went shit, but we physically cannot go back and change things. All we got is now and a few steps ahead. And so I'm so grateful for that. And I cannot wait for this next question because I know it's going to be gorgeous, but what advice would you give to those listening? Like in all of what we've talked about, which has been amazing, but what would you say for those who are listening about finding fulfillment, purpose, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Okay. My mantra is, it all works out. It always does.
Mm-hmm.
Take that and use it as much as you want. Mm-hmm. If you want to sit with it as a koan and really figure out how to like even make death be part of that equation, which I have spent time doing, mm-hmm. I found that to be useful.
Mm-hmm.
I also give you permission to question, permission to play,
mm-hmm.
permission to do it your way.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the slides that I throw up in my workshops over and over and over again is, you can't do it wrong.
Yeah, because it's your life.
You can't do it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So just like breathe. Know that it's all going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, go from there. There's plenty of us, me, Virginia, others who want you to succeed, mm-hmm. who believe in you.
Yeah.
And also, you know, for you to believe in yourself. But yeah, it all works out. It always does.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, like, I know we've covered different bases, but I've got one PS question that just came to my mind and my heart. But, like, let's talk about this mojo thing before we go into your socials, because, like, we talk about creativity and, like, grace and all these kinds of things. But I remember in our email exchange, I was like, mojo. I think that's a good ending. I don't know why I feel that way, but I think
100%. So I have five things that I live my life by. Mm-hmm. It's I use this bizarre, please, I'm not going to tell you the acronym. It's play, freedom, creativity, connection, and mojo.
Uh-huh.
And mojo is that life energy. It's the life force. It's both the badassery and also like the playfulness. And I think a little bit of like Stella got her groove back. Like it involves like sexuality, but it's just the light mm-hmm. that comes from us. And it's that place of flow and aliveness and joy and being present. And mm-hmm. it is the hardest for me to hold on to for sure.
So
just so you know, like it's not a gimme.
Not just like
it was hard.
Slam dunk.
No, but it's important to value.
Yeah.
The other ones are easier. Like I'm good at connection. I'm pretty good at creativity. Those things, like mojo is there to remind me that we have this stuff in us, and each of us, I firmly believe every single person on this planet has something unique, brilliant, wonderful, amazing to share.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of mojo too. It's just like, you know, what is your thing? What is your thing? What is your vibe? What is your essence? What is that thing? And stop tamping it down. It needs to come out, man. Just let it go.
Right.
Let your mojo.
Yes. Oh my God. We should have a workshop on this at some point. Ooh, you know, I think because, and you know what I love about that is like, even your body, like, for those watching the video, like your body language is like, fuck yeah. You know, like this energetic bubble, like your shirt's badass today. I love it. You know, I feel so drab in my gray, but you know, I think like, but yet it's the hardest thing for you. Fascinating, right? That dance, right? The different egos / you know, situations within our existence, right? And so I appreciate that it's something that you covet, it's something you crave and work with and towards, but you also have to pump yourself up sometimes, like, you know, in these, not in this conversation, but like if we're doing something on LinkedIn, it's like, okay, we're gonna market ourselves.
Ooh. That is right.
What a shit, you know, but yeah, I mean, so I love that we ended on this because mojo matters. That's a new bumper sticker. Mojo matters. Yeah. Right. I think maybe we should have some swag at some point, but like how, like, tell us where to find you, where you can help others with their mojo 100%. And all of that. Yes.
100%. So I am Meg Nyman. There's only one Meg Nyman in the world. Thank goodness. So on LinkedIn, it's, you know, LinkedIn mm-hmm. in Meg Nyman. You can find me there. The Alter Ego Project is alterego-project.
Okay.
The other version of it is actually a skydiving company, which is sort of funny. But yeah, alterego-project is a great place to find out about upcoming workshops. You can sign up for my newsletter, which mm-hmm. tries to go out every week. I continue to offer things for individuals. I also do corporate work. So if you're hearing this and think that something about alter egos might be interesting for your company or your ERG, your employee resource group, love working with queers, love working with, other marginalized people, whether that be people who identify as women or non-binary or, people of color. So, there's lots of places that this work, comes into play. And truthfully, I I just love chatting. So if you want to hit me up in the DMs on LinkedIn, I will respond. I promise. Yeah. Even allow my calendar to be open and we can just have a chat and see what happens. It brings me fulfillment to connect with other people about life as well as alter egos. So yeah, LinkedIn and Alter Ego Project website are the best. And then you can also always reach me at meg@nymandesign.com. That's my email and feel free to send a note.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for our conversation today. Oh, it's been such a boost. Every time we talk, even if it's delayed with tech issues, it is such a boost. And I adore you. And I'm so grateful we met at the Lesbians Who Tech Summit, you know, recently. And then we should just hang out at the next one, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. But yeah, no, everyone follow Meg, work with Meg. She is outstanding. And I think like this is really important work. And what I love about your stuff is it's new, it's unique, right? And it kind of has a new flavor that we all could work with. So sign up. Thank you for your wisdom today, Meg. I appreciate
the blast.
Awesome.
I had a wonderful time. Thank you for being in conversation, Virginia, as always.
Anytime. All right. And I will talk to you soon.